so critically acclaimed.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Not So Critically Acclaimed podcast. I'm Laura, and I know I've been a bit MIA on the podcast lately, so I do apologize. There's just been, you know, scheduling conflicts. My birthday was a few weeks ago, so all sorts of things going on and staying busy. But I am back now with a part three episode to discuss the highly anticipated second season of the insanely popular Netflix original series, Bridgerton. Now, just a reminder, since this is a part three episode, of course, that means that there is a part one and part two. So if you have not seen the show at all, check out part one for your spoiler-free overview. And if maybe, you know, you're looking for a season one recap or refresher before you start season two, check out part two. But on to our part three episode. I am so excited to introduce this week's guest, Rishika Jakaria. She is one of my dear friends from Emory, and we worked very closely on student government together, and now she's killing it in law school. I can't believe she's almost done with it. But she also happens to be killing it in the social media world, as you might recognize her as one of the three Jakaria sisters. So without further ado, Rishika, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everyone, and Laura, thank you so much for the introduction. As Laura mentioned, we go way back to undergrad, and, you know, we have super fun memories working together in student government, and Laura is honestly just killing it in every part of her life, too. Such an inspiration, and I'm so excited to be here, so excited to talk all things Bridgerton. I'm obsessed with the show, so I can't wait to dive into it.
Yes, oh my god, it's literally been forever. We were talking a little bit before we started recording, and it's been a little over 2 years since we've seen each other, but now we're both living in New York and definitely gonna be reconnecting in person, so it's gonna be so fun. But just to give some of our listeners, you know, a little background, like, care to just dive into what it is that you and your sisters have been doing in the last 2 years and kind of how you guys got started with everything?
Absolutely. So I have been dancing since I was 2 years old, and I have two sisters, an older sister, Omika, and a younger sister, Ashika, and we all grew up dancing together. So I feel like dance has always really connected us and brought us, you know, to each other. It's one of the ways that we really enjoy spending time together. So funny enough, in March of 2020, which is when, you know, COVID hit and we were going into lockdown, Emory actually sent all of their students back home. So I went from Atlanta back to New York, and both my sisters came home as well. We were all quarantining together, kind of just trying to wait and see, you know, what was really happening with the pandemic. And one of the silver linings was that we were now able to spend so much time together, because before COVID and before March of 2020, my sisters and I, we had all kind of been living in separate places. So it had been about 10 years since we had been back home together. So I know my parents were really thrilled to have a full house again. And I did not have TikTok. I did not have the app before I came home for quarantine. My younger sister, Ashika, was the only one who had TikTok. She knew about all the trends that were going on, and we would always tease her. Omega and I would always tease her and be like, oh my gosh, you're on this app that's for young people. It's like totally Gen Z. And you know, at the time we didn't really know what it was all about. So Ashika convinced us to post a video on my account, actually. So I downloaded the app, I made an account, and she was like, hey, let's do a dance together. Like, there's so many dances trending. Why don't we go ahead and film something? So we did it. And honestly, we had so much fun. And it was really just, you know, again, a way to spend time together. And then after we did that one dance, we saw a few TikTok trends coming up, and we started thinking about how we could add South Asian twists to these TikTok trends, because we are South Asian American. It's a really big part of our identities, and we grew up learning South Asian dance styles. So we posted a few TikTok trends. For example, there was the Oh Nana challenge. We added Dandia sticks to the Oh Nana challenge, which are traditional instruments kind of used in Gujarati folk dancing, which is in the western part of India. And after we posted that video, we...
So incredible. I mean, thank you so much for sharing the whole background and how it all came to light. And I think it's so inspiring just to hear what you and your sisters were able to do in such a tough time. And also, like, the beauty of social media and this content creation world that we're living in, where it can just happen overnight and it was never planned. And it's just something that really, like I said, happens overnight in the sense, and rewards people who you know, aren't trying to be like go viral. It's really, that's the beauty, I think, of TikTok especially. It's really rewarding people who are showing their authentic selves and what's important to them. And the audience then really sees that and it resonates with them and sees like these genuine people versus, you know, these Instagram influencers that used to be the main influencer. And it's kind of like I was doing, I remember like for a job interview, they had me do a project because it was influencer marketing and they wanted me to like come up with Instagram influencers. I'm like, who's an Instagram influencer? Like my frame of reference for influencers now is like TikTok.
Totally.
I just think that it's such a unique social media platform and one that, like you, I was also so against in the beginning. I remember like my only frame of reference was my like 14-year-old cousin who was so into the dances. And I was just like, why are people like, why does this go viral? Why do you want to watch people dance? Like, I feel like it's so stupid. And then obviously I got on TikTok once like the pandemic started and I was like, yeah, okay, I understand. I'm staying up to like 3 a.m. on this app a lot of the times.
Oh my gosh. No, I had a very similar experience. And I think, as you mentioned, the beauty of it is that TikTok is so accessible to anyone who has a phone. I feel like with a lot of other platforms like YouTube, you know, you need maybe high editing or you need to have like good equipment to film these really, you know, crazy videos. But I think on TikTok, all you need is a phone. And then TikTok has built-in editing features, which I think makes it easy for anyone to be able to use the app. So I honestly couldn't agree with that more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, I can't even like think about, which it sounds pathetic to say, but my life without TikTok, like that moment when we thought that TikTok was going to get banned in the US, I was like, I was having my moments of
it was so scary. And I think it was especially scary for us because we had just, like my sisters and I, we had just garnered this support and all these followers. And to think that something that we had worked so hard and consistently for would be taken away in the blink of an eye was really scary. And so in that moment, like we had to start thinking about how do we maintain this brand that we've created? Do we, you know, switch over to Instagram and focus on Instagram? Do we try creating a YouTube channel and building that instead? But none of those felt the same, you know, as TikTok has felt. And so I'm so happy that it didn't get banned in the US and that we've been able to continue spreading our art and spreading that joy.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think we should move on and actually discuss Bridgerton.
Yes.
So tell me, what was your experience when you were watching like the first season? Was it something you were looking forward to or more so because like everyone else was watching it and you just wanted to see what all the hype was? Because I know I definitely fell into the latter. I had no interest until it was all over my For You page. And I was like, okay, Shonda, let's go. Let's see what it's all about.
No, Shonda is amazing. I mean, I've binge watched Grey's Anatomy. So I knew that like anything that she would create would probably be really great. But that being said, I didn't know anything about Bridgerton. I guess like some people have read the books, I think. I guess they're books. But I had no idea what Bridgerton was. All I had seen was when I opened up my Netflix account, you know, it was like top 10 in the US or top 10 around the world. And Bridgerton was one of them. And so I saw the trailer and I was like, oh, this seems cool. All I had heard was that it was like Gossip Girl, but a British version. So I was intrigued. I love Gossip Girl, but I didn't know what Bridgerton was. And obviously I feel like there was so much hype around it so quickly. Like there was so much buzz about Bridgerton. And so I was like, okay, I need to watch this. I need to know what it's all about. But I'd also been told like it can get a little, you know, there were some scenes that were like a little maybe like not PG-13. And so people were like, don't watch it with your parents. So I was like, okay, I need to find time to watch it on my own. So I started the first episode and I like immediately was so intrigued. I thought that like the format where you have the narrator speaking, Lady Whistledown, and then kind of like narrating the events of, you know, what's happening in at the time was really interesting. And it just, I kept wanting more. So then I like literally binge watched the entire first season, probably within two and a half days. And it was so amazing. And obviously like the characters are all so talented. They're incredible actors. So it was definitely like something that I enjoyed watching. It was such a great way to kind of take my mind off of the pandemic for a little bit, because it did come out, you know, during that time when there was just so much going on. So I loved the first season. I thought the storyline was great.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of similar. Like, I didn't know too much about it, I think, beforehand. Like, I think all I knew is that it was from Shonda Rhimes and it was going to be like a period piece, but I'm just not usually into period pieces at all. But when I heard, just like you, about the Gossip Girl-esque to it, I was like, oh, let me see. So between like the fact that there was the Gossip Girl component and the like insane buzz that was happening on social media and just in general, I was like, okay, let's see. And I have to say, like, I was definitely surprised by how much I enjoyed the side characters, I guess, and that made me like look forward to the future seasons, because I don't know why, but I just really didn't like Simon and Daphne at all. I thought they were pretty boring. And I definitely found myself more interested in the other Bridgertons and their stories, like especially Eloise and Colin. And when obviously I heard how amazing the show did, like with all the ratings and breaking records and stuff, and then the fact that it was literally renewed for seasons 2, 3, and 4 all together at once, I was like, okay, I can breathe. I'm gonna get like to see these stories unfold, because that's always like the downside when you get super into a show and then it gets like canceled and everything. But luckily this show, the fans really carried it, and I think I feel like there weren't too many people around our age who would have probably read the books beforehand, but I would bet that a lot of them are reading them now. I haven't read them, but maybe one day. But I'm definitely like so excited for the future seasons. And I mean, we got to talk about season 2, because that's obviously what we're gonna do.
Oh my gosh.
So what was your like overall impression of the second season and where the characters stood, and just like overall impression, I guess?
Have a South Asian character playing like a lead role in this period piece that's set, you know, where maybe during a time when you don't see a lot of South Asian people, like in Britain or, you know, in that area at the time. So I was very excited, but unsure about how the season would play out and what it would even be like. Then season 2 came out, and immediately I like started hearing such great things about it, like probably even better than season 1, and from the South Asian community, like from people that I follow, you know, people that I've met through a lot of the social media that we've stuff, people started posting about it. My younger sister Ashika watched it and she told me, oh my goodness, you need to watch this, it is amazing. So again, I binge watched season 2 probably in less time than I watched season 1. But I, like, words can't even describe how incredible season 2 was. I thought that like the character development was so much deeper. And it's so interesting you said that you weren't rooting for Simon and Daphne in season 1. I can kind of see that, because I feel like in season 2 with Kate and Anthony, like their character development and their love interest was just so deep and like not cliche. I felt like it was it was just so well panned out. And I mean, once season 2 was over, I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to watch now? I need more of them. Like, how can this be over? I was so not ready for it to just end. And I was like, oh my God, I hope that they both come back in season 3. And like, part of season 3 is still about, you know, like what they're going through and like their relationship building.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, in my opinion, season 2 was a million times better than season 1. I think a good majority of people agree on that. And I always feel like that kind of would make sense, you know, at least for the second season. Shows are like, they have their groove, you know, the first one is, you never know how things are going to land and how people are going to resonate with it or anything. And so once you have like that success, they're kind of like, okay, clearly what we did for season 1 worked, like let's make it better. And they're a little bit more comfortable and confident, I think, with their storytelling going forward. And I agree with you exactly. And that's why I liked season 2 better, because Kate and Anthony's story, there was so much more depth to it, in that obviously they were relating to one another because they both were carrying these burdens on their family to, you know, be responsible for the future well-being of their siblings. And I just felt like Simon and Daphne in the first season. I mean, Daphne, like, okay, she was the diamond of the season. There was literally nothing in her story and in her life, at least that we got insight into, that made us be like, oh, yeah, I feel for her, and anything like that. Like, Simon, we did a little bit more with all of his, like, relationship with his parents and the way he grew up and stuff. But literally, Daphne was, like, so unlikable in my opinion. And so I was really into season two and the relationship unfolding between the two of them. And to top it all off, though, we got more development, of course, for all the other Bridgertons, like especially Eloise, Colin, and Penelope's stories. And those are the ones that I'm most excited about. But a point you made that always makes me think of it is like, oh, will Kate and Anthony be in season three? So I think both of the actors have been officially confirmed that they'll be reprising their roles. But to, you know, what degree will we actually get to see their story? Like, will we get to see any aspect of their wedding or like having their kids or finding out that they're pregnant, whatever? I think that'll be interesting because that's kind of the sad part is like the way that the show is set up. Every season is about another kid. So like the more you go, the less you get, because every character is going to be like put behind you then. So it's like, okay, in the next season we're going to get even less of Daphne and now less of Anthony, and it's just going to keep going. So I kind of feel like once we get Eloise's story and Colin's, I'm probably going to be like so bored. I guess they'll probably develop the younger siblings, because obviously right now they're just like kids and no one cares about them other than the running joke of like, let's see if they forget that they, I think there's one of the actresses who's in something else. So she's in like almost none of the scenes when all the family's together. And that's like a running joke that everyone on social media is always like, you have 8 children, Lady Bridgerton, like you're forgetting one or something.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even know that. I didn't even realize that there was a child missing from a lot of the scenes.
I think it's like Hyacinth or Francesca. No, it's the older one. So I think it's Francesca. Cause I'm just going based on the alphabet. Cause she comes first. I think the show was incredible, and already the fact that I realized if they do go in order and like Benedict is next and then Colin and then Eloise, I'm like, I have to wait 3 more years to see Eloise's story. Like I can't. That's too much for me. But I'll probably just rewatch season two in the meantime. My favorite episode. Did you have a favorite episode or scene? Because
yes.
Let me hear it.
So it's honestly really hard to pick a favorite episode because I feel like each episode had something really like different yet deep happening. And like in terms of Edwina and Kate's relationship, in terms of Kate and Anthony's relationship, Edwina and Anthony, you know. So it's hard to pick a favorite episode, but there were a few scenes that really stood out to me this season. And it kind of goes back to what I touched on before about the South Asian representation and seeing how they weaved the characters' South Asian identities into their interactions with one another. So there's one scene where Kate is giving Edwina like a head massage, and she's putting oil in Edwina's hair. So hair oiling is a really common practice in South Asian countries. So I would grow up, you know, with my mom putting coconut oil in my hair almost every night. And it's just like a tradition that's very prominent in South Asian households. So to see these two characters in this like story, in this story about Bridgerton, obviously doing like having a scene where they're hair oiling, it was just so incredible because that's something that like I felt like I was relating to for the first time, and I felt like I could relate to these characters deeper. So I thought that was incredible that Shonda Rhimes included that. And then there was another scene right before Edwina is about to get married. They are putting like a yellow paste on Edwina's arms, and that is called a holi ceremony. So they have that like in Indian weddings for the bride and the groom. It's like turmeric and yogurt. They mix it into a paste and then you put it on, a few days before the wedding. And it's just one of the ceremonies that is, you know, very widely practiced in South Asian culture. So to see them having a holi ceremony, like on, yeah, I've never seen that before. So those two scenes really were just so great to watch, and particularly stood out to me because I could really like relate to those. It's like these are all things that I've either participated in or that I've seen. So it was incredible to see like the two of the main characters do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's especially incredible to hear how you've been able to resonate with it, and that's something that the show I think did well, at least that based on what you're describing, relating to the fact that they didn't just rely on like surface level representation. They're trying to go, you know, like and pick up on more of those details and show that they actually, you know, did their homework and are trying to not just do it for the sake of doing it, but actually to give people that opportunity to be like, oh, look, my family does that too. And seeing that practice in, like you said, on mainstream TV is just something that's hasn't been done in every aspect of, you know, television. And I think that's really incredible that they're doing that and making the effort to do so, because obviously it's incredibly important. And also just one note about the hair oiling. I mean, working, because your hair, like I know, is so shiny and soft. I'm like,
thank you.
So
incredible. No, hair oiling is such like, I mean, the reason we do it is like to keep your hair strong. And you know, when I was younger, I remember like I would go to elementary school sometimes with oil in my hair, and I used to be so embarrassed. Like I used to hate that my mom would like put my hair in a braid and make me go to school with oil in my hair. But as I've grown older and like seeing that tradition on TV, it just makes me feel so much more comfortable and confident. And you know, like traditions that my mom has tried to pass down to me and my sisters, and it makes me think like, you know, if I ever have kids, I will obviously pass that down to them, because instead of feeling embarrassed by something like that, like, you know, it should be celebrated. So I think that's why like that scene really stood out to me. And then there was actually one more thing. So every time Edwina refers to her sister Kate, she calls her Didi, which is actually like a term that means older sister. It's what you call your older sister, and you know, in many South Asian languages. And so I love that she was calling her that, because that's something else I've never ever seen in the media. And like I call my cousin sisters that are older than me Didi, or even my older sister when I was younger, I would call her Didi. So to see Edwina say that to her sister, I think was so special. And after learning more about their relationship and like knowing that they're not necessarily blood related, but the fact that Edwina respects her sister so much to call her that, I thought that was such fantastic like character development.
Yeah, definitely. I remember when I was watching, I didn't know what it meant. I was trying to think maybe it was like a nickname, but based on her name being Kate, I didn't see how, you know, the two related. But then I did read some, because I was obviously obsessed with the season and was reading everything online. And so I did learn that. And I think, again, just like driving home the details. And like you said, also the fact that they were only half sisters, but that she respected her so much, like in every aspect of life, like really looked up to her. And it almost seemed like she was more like of a mom to her and more of that number one person than her, you know, actual mom was. So that was kind of a little crazy in my opinion. But I would say like the family dynamics was the part of the show that I really enjoyed this season, specifically like in the third episode when I think they're visiting like the Sharma sisters are visiting the Bridgertons at like the original estate that they lived at, like where their father died. And they're playing Pall Mall, which is like the precursor to croquet, because I was watching, I'm like, they're not calling it croquet, but it looks like croquet. And I just loved getting to see all the Bridgertons kind of act as a family and joking around with one another and all that sibling rivalry, because we don't really get to see them act like that ever, I would say, like on a normal basis. They're always, especially given that the season was about Anthony and how he's so like serious and always strict and everything, and acting like as the father to his younger siblings, it was really nice to see it more like lax and just that they're kids hanging out. And anytime like they're with their mom and they're, I feel like there's always these snide remarks being shared amongst them that I absolutely love. Like it goes back to season one, but when Eloise found out and that like about how basically kids are like conceived and the boys obviously know, which was a whole other thing I talked about in season one. I just could not get over the fact of how like these girls are just so in the dark, but like that was, I guess, the times. I mean, I don't know. Or if they're just like playing it up for the show. But like when she came in, and then obviously the three boys are just, you know, making jokes amongst themselves. And obviously like the mom knows the truth, but she doesn't want Eloise to know. And I was just like hysterical that whole scene. But I really loved any sort of sibling relationship scenes. And we obviously were talking about Kate and Edwina, and that scene, like when they're playing the Pall Mall game, clearly Kate was like very competitive and, you know, into it, whereas Edwina like didn't really care for it. And so I think this was like the start of us seeing the sheer differences between the two sisters. And so I would just love, I know you already kind of touched upon it a lot, but as someone who has two sisters, you're the middle sister, so you have a different, you know, understanding of like seeing the older and the younger sister and all of that. So what did you think of their relationship in general? And did you feel like any of it related to your own experience and relationship with your sisters?
Yeah, it was like I would get emotional as I was watching the season because I could see that sister dynamic and I could see how it kind of translates to, you know, my relationship with my sisters at times. And as you mentioned, I'm the middle child. So I feel like I saw a little part of myself in both characters because obviously Kate is the older sister and she feels like she has to take on more responsibility and she feels like she has to take on more sacrifices. And, you know, I feel like my older sister has always been like that because she is the eldest of, you know, like a first generation family here. And she's always paved the path for us. And then at times me, like as kind of, you know, being the middle, but also an older sister to Ashika, my younger sister, I feel like I've, taken on that role at times too. And then obviously Edwina is younger. She's a little more naive. Like she doesn't really understand, you know, what like the real world looks like. And I feel like that relationship where Kate is kind of guiding Edwina through the world and making sure that like her sister is protected was so endearing to see, because I think that as somebody with two sisters, like we've always protected each other and we're always looking out for each other. And it was so nice to see that, you know, like kind of come to fruition in this, in Kate and Edwina's story, because I think it's so true. And it's so, like, it's the reality of what like a sister dynamic and relationship looks like.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I only have a brother, so I cannot relate at all, to any of the sister dynamics, but just like at least being a person who can see the hardships and everything, I think it was extremely hard on Kate to constantly be putting her sister first and, you know, never thinking of herself. I think it was incredibly selfless and just amazing and shows the, you know, greatness of her character as a person and like her morals and what's important in life and how much she loved her sister and everything. But I think it could also be like incredibly difficult that she always has to feel the need at least to put her sister first and never let herself get anything. And I think that is obviously why her and Anthony worked so well, because they both understood that challenge. And I also think it was incredibly difficult and lonely for Kate to have to share that secret to herself of the whole, you know, deal that was made with her technically stepmom's grandparents, that if Edwina married someone of good stature, then the grandparents would like pay the dowry and, you know, support the, I guess, the mom and everything. And I just felt like that was a really big burden for her to carry alone. And at least she could have shared it with her mother. Like, it's not like she wouldn't have found out that Kate was in cahoots with her parents, you know? So it might have been, might as well have been done from the beginning. So Kate, one, didn't have to carry the burden alone, but also like, I feel like there was a level of shame then from the mom when she kind of found out that this deal was being done behind her back and almost like she didn't have any say in the lives of her daughters and everything. I don't know. In a way, it kind of felt like, is that disrespectful? Like, you know? I was like, oh, maybe a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was just something that I'm kind of noting now. And I think also that was another interesting layer that they added to the season of the mom, I'm blanking on her name, but the fact that she had that little scandal of her own where she was the diamond of the season and then went against, like, obviously the nature of things and fell in love with someone who already had a kid and then moved away from everything she knew. I think that would be a really interesting story to get more of the depth to. And we're going to talk about the Bridgerton prequel a little bit later, but I feel like that would be a cool episode just to see how it unfolded or something, maybe.
Yeah, that would be so cool to see, especially because I think it would be so interesting to like see parallels between the mom story and then Kate and Edwina and what they're going through in this season, because it's not as like unrelated as it might seem, and I think it would explain why the mom reacted the way she did a lot of the time when it came to like the Kate Edwina Anthony love triangle.
Yeah, definitely. But speaking of the Sharma girls and their family, I know you've already mentioned a fair amount, but I obviously want to address in a specific question about the South Asian representation that we saw this season. And obviously, like, a major reason that I reached out to you to be on this podcast episode was because you're an Indian American woman who is very in touch with her culture. And I wanted to just hear your thoughts on the component of the season of including it. And also, I know you've mentioned a good amount of it already, so I'll kind of add a second layer of the question. But, you know, what do you think this season will do and how it will impact what they do in the future seasons in terms of representation? Because I think from the start, that was already something that Shonda Rhimes was pushing back on. The fact that, I mean, the queen is obviously a Black woman. And, you know, in reality of whatever year it was, the 1700s, like, there were not, of course, going to be Black people in royalty or, you know, anywhere outside of being servants just based on the realities of history. But that's something that they kind of completely eradicated from the show, and just they're never like drawing attention to the fact that like that would be out of the normal. Like, no, they've kind of just established it to be the norm. So I'm kind of curious to see that, how they continue to do that and what you think they'll do in terms of like, will they stop here with the South Asian representation? Or do you think that, you know, there are obviously 8 Bridgerton kids, so there's plenty of more stories to be told. So what are your hopes for how that continues in the show going forward?
Yeah, no, I love this question, because a large part of, you know, as I mentioned, why I like knew about season 2 and why I watched it in the first place was just knowing that 2 of the ones were South Asian women, which I thought was so incredible. What I really respect, and you kind of alluded to this when you talk about, you know, the queen and how they never really draw attention to the fact that this is out of the like ordinary probably at that time, is that the representation is like, for the South Asian representation specifically, it's subtle yet so powerful. Like, I feel like obviously in the media, we see South Asian representation in various shows, like, you know, Never Have I Ever on Netflix by Mindy Kaling. And there's so many other series where you have South Asian characters, but I've always felt like in those series, a lot of the South Asian characters kind of play into tropes or stereotypes about what it means to be South Asian or South Asian American. And I feel like a lot of the times the characters, like, their worth or their identity is questioned because they are Indian or because they're South Asian, because they might have brown skin. But I felt like in this season of Bridgerton, like, the representation was subtle in the sense that we loved seeing, as I mentioned, the Holi ceremony, you know, Edwina called, and those were just examples of like subtle representation where they're not in your face that these characters are Indian or, you know, they are from the South Asian subcontinent. Like, it's subtly weaving those cultural elements into their everyday interactions. And another thing that I loved was even like the outfits and everything that Kate and Edwina were wearing. They would wear these earrings that are commonly found in India. They're called jhumkis, and they have like a special design that, you know, Kate and Edwina, both of them would wear earrings like that. And then even during Edwina's wedding scene, Kate was wearing that bangle, which me, like, I have bangles that look just like that. So I think that's what I love so much, was like, they weren't drawing attention to the fact that, okay, these two girls are Indian, like, their characters are from India. It was very subtly yet powerfully weaved into their like interactions with themselves and their other characters. So I really love that. And I think Shonda Rhimes like hit the nail on the head with the representation. I don't think I've seen anything like that in the media. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we've seen shows like Never Have I Ever. And of course you see South Asian characters and other popular series, but
they often kind of feed into stereotypes or, you know, what you like what you assume South Asian or Indian American people might be like. But I think Bridgerton, like, as I keep saying, it's so subtle, but I think that's such a good way to describe it, because it was just so subtly done. And I think that's what made it so powerful.
Exactly. And I think another note about the subtlety of it was, I was, of course, scrolling through TikTok all the time. And after the new season came out, my For You page was flooded with Bridgerton videos, a good chunk of them being about Jonathan Bailey, who plays Anthony. A good handful were applauding the show for their diversity and having a South Asian woman play a romantic lead in such a popular show. And I think that was just, like you're saying, breaking the barrier in terms of not letting them stay in the stereotypical tropes that are typically done in the mainstream television and media world, but, you know, putting them elsewhere and just showing that they're literally just like everyone else. We're not going to make them be like the nerd or something mm-hmm. like that, you know. Oh, they're pre-med, and like, obviously yeah. that's no frame of reference in Bridgerton, but you know what I mean. And I think another example was with the instrumental songs. Obviously that's a huge part of Bridgerton, and that was something that really caught the hype in season one when everyone was like watching it, and all of a sudden you're hearing, you know, Wildest Dreams by Taylor Swift in an instrumental, or Thank You Next, and it's like, whoa, I didn't expect that. And I know that was another big thing that obviously people were expecting for season two, and I believe that one of the songs was a Bollywood song, correct?
Yeah, so the song was actually from this iconic movie called Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gum, and it's like one of the most like famous movies probably that was made in the early 2000s, and like their cast was like an all-star cast. Some of the best Bollywood actors were in that movie. And so when we found out that Bridgerton turned like the main soundtrack from Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gum, and that's actually the name of the song as well, to an instrumental version for the show, like the South Asian community was so thrilled and so excited to listen to this, like the soundtrack. And Laura, I'm not even kidding. When I heard the soundtrack, I got so emotional, because it was like so beautiful, not only feeling like how the original song makes me feel, because I love the original song and like the movie is just so incredible, but then hearing it in the context of like this instrumental version for Bridgerton, it just felt like my colliding, and I got so excited to hear that. It's such a beautiful song. Everyone's like been joking around, everyone's been making videos on TikTok being like, oh my god, I want to like walk down the aisle during my wedding to this, like to this song. All like the South Asian people have been saying that. Because it was just that powerful and like that beautiful to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what's so touching about it also is like going back to that subtlety, and that because the words are stripped away from it and it's just the instrumental music, so it's exactly on the same, you know, parallel as all the other music that they included this season. And I know like there were some other songs, which I'll list all of them, but like there were some of them that I didn't know what they were, like, you know, the Nirvana song I definitely didn't know of, but this was one I didn't know either, obviously. But I think that was the beauty of it, in the sense that, again, it was like not overly calling attention to the fact that they were including a Bollywood song in the show and trying to like get clout for that and like, oh yes, check, we're doing diversity. Like, no, it was just on the same playing field as everything else. Mm-hmm. And I love to hear just how it resonated with you and everyone else that you're talking about in your culture, and how much it means. And I think I feel like obviously I'm a white person, so me saying like I'm overjoyed about this is ridiculous, but I'm just like, I think it's really special to just hear it from someone who can appreciate it much more than I can. And the fact that you're like, people are saying they want to walk down the aisle to it, I think that's just incredible. And I didn't know anything about this song, but now I'm curious to kind of hear the original and in frame of the movie, and I'm going to read a little bit more about that next, because I think that's especially moving. Like, you know, some of the other songs they took are just like random songs, like, okay, Diamonds by Rihanna, but some of the other ones, you know, are more impactful. And so speaking of all the instrumental songs, we have to talk about the ones from this season. So like I mentioned, there was Stay Away by Nirvana, which I don't know about you, but I did not pick up on that one.
I didn't either.
I don't think I even know the song. Like, I didn't bother to listen to it, the actual song, but I don't think that I know it. Maybe it's one of those, like, oh, if you hear it, you'll be like, oh, I know this, but definitely didn't know that. Material Girl, My Banana was, I thought, so great, because all I'm thinking is Material Girls, like,
I know.
The Shrek thing. So I was like, oh, right, it's a non, like, Gen Z remixed version. And then Diamonds by Rihanna. Dancing on My Own by Robin was another one of those songs that I totally recognized, because I was like, I know that this is obviously like a pop culture song that was made an instrumental, because just based on how much it was used in the scene, but I'm like, I have no idea what the name of it is, who sings it, but it just seems so familiar. And then of course I looked it up, I was like, I still don't know it, but like, I do at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then I also caught up, like, You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette. That was subtle. That was like in a random little scene. I was like, is that Alanis Morissette? I think so. Of course, Sign of the Times by Harry Styles, I think was the big, that was like the Wildest Dreams, I think, of this season. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people. And that scene, like specifically when Kate dropped her bangles, that was like insane. You know what scene, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the scene from Crazy Rich Asians when, have you seen that movie?
Yes. Is it when she's walking, like the water yeah. starts flowing? Oh my yeah. God. Yes. Yes.
It's so reminding me, but just because they were so like, the whole point is obviously in Crazy Rich Asians, whoever's getting married, it's like they're friends, but Henry Golding, and I'm blanking on, Christine Wu. I'm blanking on her name. Oh my God. But the woman who played the lead in Crazy Rich mm-hmm. Asians, like they are both like locking eyes, just like dead set as if it was their wedding. And that just reminded me of, and they were playing that song, But I Can't Help Like Falling in Love.
Yeah. I got so emotional during that scene. It was just so good.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like such a standstill. And it kind of reminded me of now this scene where obviously Anthony is trying to get married, but he's too focused on Kate and like has that deadlock, and then her bangles like break the silence, and it's like, and he jumps to pick them up for her, and it's like, yeah, I love. Also, that just reminds me of how Edwina after the fact was like, was I really that blind? Like, yup.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so obvious. Like, girl, you just did not see it at all. And then there was like, What About Us by Pink, How Deep Is Your Love by Calvin Harris and Disciples, and then Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus. So there were definitely like a lot of big names this season, but I don't know. I feel like I kind of expected more. It could just be that, you know, Taylor Swift's Wildest Dreams in season one was so epic, in my opinion. I was expecting like another one of Taylor's songs, mm-hmm. but instead we got songs from two of her exes. but that's just the Swiftie in me. And also listing them all like this, I didn't realize there were this many. Like, I remember watching the first episode or two and being like, wow, there's so many songs in each episode already. We're gonna get so many more this season than last. And then the next several episodes there was nothing, and I was like, well, I guess I was wrong. But now looking at them, I guess there were quite a few. So did you have a favorite, aside from obviously the Bollywood song, or did you catch them all? Because I always find like that was me season one. I caught the first one because I don't think I knew. I think like going into season one, I didn't know that they were doing this with the popular songs. And then I was like, why does this kind of sound like Ariana Grande, Thank You Next? And then only after like I like looked it up to confirm, and then I learned like, oh, this is a thing. So then going forward, I was like trying to pay attention, because honestly otherwise I really don't think I would have been able to pick up on a lot of them. But that's yeah. just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, just hearing you kind of list off the main songs from this season, I don't think I caught them all when I was watching, and it makes me kind of want to go back, rewatch the season, and kind of hear where they're putting each song, because I feel like they were probably really intentional about putting How Deep Is Your Love in a certain scene, or like Wrecking Ball in another scene. I think it would be interesting to see how they like tied those instrumental songs into the plot. Mm-hmm. But no, I feel like that twist on the pop songs and putting them in the show that is obviously from like not the 21st century, like where it's set, I think it makes it more exciting for our generation to watch, because it's like, it kind of feels a little modern, like they're adding these little things in for us to kind of be like, hey, I actually know this song. And the fact that they make it instrumental makes it even more fun to listen to. So I know, I think I'm definitely gonna have to rewatch. I mean, I'm looking for any excuse to rewatch the season, if I'm being honest. So I want to rewatch and kind of see like where they placed all these songs and in which scenes they were, you know, deciding to put these soundtracks over.
Yeah, I think the one that stood out for me that I picked up on, I was like, oh, that makes sense. It was right after the queen named Edwina the diamond of the season. They did Diamonds by Rihanna. I was like, okay, yeah, that makes total sense. And that's the one that like stood out for me in terms of matching the plot. But I totally agree with you in that, again, the creators know what they're doing when trying to make the show relevant, because like I said at the very beginning, when I talked about my experience watching season one and how I don't like period pieces. So the whole point is they have to paint this as not your average period piece type of show. Like it has the Gossip Girl-esque of Lady Whistledown. And now like these pop songs coming in and like surprising you. I think it's just these subtle things that it's like almost rewarding you for watching a period piece. It's like, yeah, here, it's a little like pop culture 21st century thing, but also totally there with you for wanting to rewatch it every second. But honestly, I feel like we've kind of just scratched the surface with the actual plot lines of season two, so I feel like we need to really dive into the main takeaways or like the main things that happened. So up first, obviously Kate and Anthony, what did you think about their relationship and how everything played out for the two of them?
Yeah, I obviously was rooting for them from the beginning, because you could just see that they both are really adventurous, and then they both also have this like internal struggle where they feel like they have to sacrifice so much for their families. And I think that's what connects them on such a deep level, because there's nobody else that I think they think understands what they're going through. So I was like obviously so thrilled when finally he, you know, kind of like tells her like I like you, and like this is something that I can't control, and she reciprocates a little bit. I will say though that I thought it took them a lot of episodes to reach that point.
Oh my god, yes, and yeah,
I was like, okay, when is this gonna happen? Like there are two episodes left or something, you know, like how can you fit so much in into just two episodes? But I thought that obviously like their relationship was so deep on an emotional level, and like that's where their love for each other stems from, which I think is so beautiful. That being said, I thought it ended really abruptly, like the last scene. I felt a little disappointed. I was like, okay, I have no idea what happened to Edwina, really. I mean, I know that she obviously approves of this for her sister, but like it just felt like, okay, now Kate is in his, like, you know, living with him and she's around the family, but it's like, what happened to Kate's mom and sister? Like, how, like, where do Anthony and Edwina stand? You know, I was curious to see more of that. So maybe that's something that they'll flesh out in season three. But yeah, I thought it ended pretty abruptly. I wasn't expecting that.
I would definitely agree. I think the fact that it was literally one of the last scenes in the last episode where they finally confess their feelings for each other and they love each other and they're like happy together, I'm like, are you kidding me? That's ridiculous. And also, like, especially the wedding episode when Edwina obviously realized that there was something going on between Anthony and Kate and then was taking forever to decide. Well, yeah. I thought that was the longest episode. I was like, this is so unnecessary. And yeah, it was kind of like, I think at the beginning when I knew, or like at least from the first episode, like realized, okay, there's going to be like a love triangle here, I didn't think Edwina would kind of play as big of a role as she did. Yeah. And to then not give her like a real ending, like just the illusion of like, I know a prince or something, like, you know, for her, but then just kind of to get like swept under the rug, I thought that was kind of not whole, like, holistic writing in the sense of the show. But you know, who knows, maybe in the future. I don't know if Edwina's been, the actress who played her has been confirmed to be coming back, but that could be, like you were saying, to see more of their whole storyline, Kate Anthony and the rest of the family, and how everything happens in the future. Because obviously our set of comparison is like looking at how Daphne played a role in this season, given mm-hmm. that obviously season one was her season and now she's like not really relevant. But I think she probably had less of a role because the Duke wasn't there. So they were like, how much do we include? But since we know that both Anthony and Kate are already coming back, maybe they'll have more, you know, of a story than Daphne did this season. But I will say, like, I kind of liked Daphne being like the audience's person this season, and how we were all like, okay, it's clearly something between Kate and Anthony, and we were all picking up on it, and she clearly was too. And like when she first thought that Kate was Edwina, and so I just thought it was really amusing to see Daphne pick up on the tension and was just kind of riding the wave like the rest of us were. So what did you think about that? Also, like, because I know, I'm just curious, like, where did you stand in the whole, like, the Duke not being in season two?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I was so sad when they said he wasn't coming back, because I forget his name, but, like, you know, he plays Simon, and he was just so great. And I think him and Daphne, like, created such a great season one that really laid the groundwork for season two to be so successful. So I was curious to see, like, how would they, as you mentioned, include Daphne, but to a point where it doesn't feel weird that the Duke isn't there, and it doesn't feel like they have their own issues going on. So mm-hmm. I love that, like, they kind of they were kind of like transitioning away from Daphne's story, where you kind of see, like, she has her baby now, and she, you know, is like this mature sister who can kind of sympathize with the characters because she just went through it last season. So I thought it was interesting, like, the how her role kind of shifted, but she still played a pretty big part, I think, in, like, being the one who could reason with Anthony and, like, kind of see what her brother is going through. So I thought it was really interesting, and I don't know if she's coming back next season, but I think, like, I'm pretty satisfied with how her story has kind of wrapped up.
Yeah, I feel like it would probably be a little just irrelevant if she continues to pop up more going forward. Like, I think it would be too forceful. At least for, like, Colin and Benedict's season, I feel like it would be not as relevant. Eloise's season, I think Daphne will play a big role just because she's obviously her older sister. And that's going to be a whole thing. Like, oh my God, when the show started with Eloise coming out dressed for the season, I was literally dying. I was like, oh my God, girl wants to be anywhere but here. And it's phenomenal. But before we get to Eloise, we got to talk about kind of, I think, her partner in crime sometimes. I mean, not Penelope, but I feel like Eloise and Benedict, the two of them have this little, like, tag team thing going about being, like, the outsiders sometimes. So what are you expecting to see from Benedict and, like, art school and his love life? I know a lot of people think that Benedict's season is going to be next, just because if they continue to go in age order, he would be next, and according to the books. But they have said that they're not necessarily going in order. So do you think that Benedict will be next? And also, I know I'm throwing, like, so many things on here right now, but I know season one, a lot of people thought that Benedict was going to be gay, or at least, you know, like, struggling with his sexuality. Like, I definitely picked up on some of that in season one and thought that's where it was going to go. And then season two, they just kind of completely eradicated that. So where do you kind of stand in that? And especially obviously in frame of the show being a period piece, and not that people who are gay didn't exist back then, obviously, but that it's kind of like taboo in that culture. So do you think that, like, the show would try to go there in the modern realm, or do you think they'll stay pretty, you know, along the lines of what was appropriate for back in the day?
Laura, those are all really interesting questions, because I feel like Benedict's character is not a character that I was super invested in necessarily, but I think his role as kind of like one of the middle children, something that I can relate to, is he's at the point where his older brother Anthony has taken on the responsibility of the family, you know, after their father has passed, and Benedict has been given that leeway and freedom to pursue art, which is what he's passionate about. But I think even then, he's struggling with, like, his credibility and whether he's really worthy of, you know, being at that art school, because he's worried that he's kind of getting in through nepotism. So I don't know. I'm curious, like, if the season on Benedict will be about his love life or more about like how he's struggling with like art. Sure. I think I'm like excited to see how it plays out.
Yeah, very much the same. I would say Benedict also is not one of my top characters that I'm looking forward to, but I think the nature of it is that the season will always surprise you because it's going to give you way more than the little bit of their character that you're getting in one of their siblings in the siblings season. You know, we only got like a handful of things about Anthony in season one, and then for this whole to unfold in season two when we got to see like how he was there when his father died and then literally had to take on the role of being the man of the house like instantaneously, that was a whole nother layer that we obviously had no idea of beforehand. So I think it could definitely continue to do that with Benedict's story, and I think it'll probably be a combo of maybe he is in art school and that's where like we started to see him with the model. But I feel like in every season, one of the siblings kind of gets a fling with someone, but then it's not like who their actual person is. And that brings us to Eloise, because I think that was something of a big plot point for a lot of fans kind of intrigued with. So Eloise this season, in my opinion, was amazing because it was our first glance of her joining the romantic playing field, a place she never wanted to be, and then she kind of fell into a little bit, specifically with the character of Theo. And I bring it up because obviously in season one, Anthony had his thing with Sienna, and now in season two, Benedict was having this thing with the model who I don't know how relevant she is. If I can't even think of her name, if she even had a name. So I'm just curious if like Theo is going to be, you know, Eloise's version of that for this season, and he's not going to be her, you know, actual person for her like season, which I don't know. I definitely like shipped the two of them, but I know according to the books, like she ends up with someone else. So I'm just really curious how they're going to go about keeping Theo in the season, if at all. And I would just like to say that I could kind of see where the tropes are going, because every season is like a literal romantic trope. Daphne and Simon were fake dating. Kate and Anthony were enemies to lovers. Eloise with Theo could be like forbidden love. Colin and Penelope are unrequited love or friends to lovers. And I don't want to tell Benedict's, like, I mean, anyone can look it up, but I don't want to ruin it for you. I didn't like read it, but I know like the general frame of the story. So it like could be described in two words. But my point is that they're all like capturing these classic tropes. So I would love to see the forbidden love, you know, delved into a little bit more, because we got like a hint when we learned about Kate and Edwina's mom and how she obviously left to be with someone who, according to her parents, was not deemed fit to their standards and everything. So it was basically forbidden. But I feel like that would be a very interesting topic given how much society expectations play into the story of Bridgerton. But that was a ramble, but I just have to, because Eloise is my favorite character for sure, because I just love how much she like fights on the boundaries of things and just keeps pushing the barriers.
Yeah, I loved Eloise and Theo, because I feel like even if she doesn't end up with Theo, like what he represents to her is somebody that she kind of fell in love with through their like intellectual conversations, because she obviously is very smart. You know, she does not necessarily believe in the entire like courting season and, you know, how women are expected to behave. Like she's always kind of been pushing that barrier and, you know, learning on her own and being, even though she's a girl, like she's really smart and she knows a lot and she's itching to learn more about the world. So I'm curious to see, but I feel like Theo may have like set that standard for her. It's like maybe whoever now she ends up with hopefully will be a person like that, that she falls in love with because they see her as an equal and they see her as somebody who's smart and, you know, is very like is challenging him, and also like he's challenging her intellectually. So I thought that was really cool. And like, yeah, I loved Eloise and her character. So I'm very excited to see her season play out.
Yeah. I mean, I think you put it so perfectly, and the whole idea of her having these standards of someone who is her equal and will see her as someone who can actually contribute to a conversation and not just good to like have kids and raise the family, but is, you know, interested in living a more, I guess, in her eyes, fulfilling life, like outside of being a mom and a wife. And I think also the other dynamic is that she never saw that for herself. And I think that is also what Theo represents, and that like she was actually able to fall for someone to an extent, and something she never thought that, like, oh, fall for someone like my siblings, like that's so below me, kind of. And I think it was just kind of fun to see, like, no, she's human too, and that's gonna happen. And I think that'll just be a whole whirlwind, but I don't want to wait 3 years for it. But the only story I'll settle to see before then is definitely Colin and Penelope. This one, like, gutted me. Like, what Colin said at the very end, just, like, when he basically, him and Penelope were dancing, and he was like, oh, you're so special to me, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, my God, he finally sees me, only for, like, 5 minutes later, him to be sitting around with, like, a bunch of the other guys saying how, like, oh, please, I'll never see Penelope that way or something like that. And I was like, oh, she heard that. I was crying. But I was like, it felt kind of out of character for him to buy into the whole, like, bashing of women with his fellow lads. Like, I don't know. I feel like that was something, there was something up with that. Like, maybe he was just doing it as a front, or not that that's, like, acceptable, but I just feel like there was something a little fishy off of it, because it just seemed very much out of character. But where do you stand on, like, Colin and Penelope and their dynamic? I mean, it's obvious that eventually it'll happen, but it's very frustrating sitting here watching.
Yeah, I agree. It did seem very out of character, like that one of those last few scenes where he's speaking like that. I will say, though, I feel like throughout the season, we see Colin a lot, like, from Penelope's point of view, maybe, or like from the way she thinks about him, and like how she, anytime, like, we, I feel like a lot of the times that Colin comes in scenes is like in a scene with Penelope, and like she's kind of, you know, like doe-eyed over him, and she like sees this future with this person that she's grown up with that's like her friend Eloise's brother. But I feel like maybe that's not who Colin really is, and like I don't really know much about the books and whether they, I guess, as you mentioned earlier, like, maybe they do end up together in the book. So I'm curious to see how in the series itself, they'll actually, like, be able to bounce back from Colin saying things like that and Penelope hearing that stuff to then having them end up together.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know, like, their storyline in the books at all. So I don't know how they're gonna get there. I'm just, like, assuming from the general, like, common sense of the show that, like, we all feel for Penelope, or at least, I mean, some people might not, given the whole Lady Whistledown stuff, but in general, like, she's not so much so painted as like an evil person that you're not going to root for. So it's kind of like you want to see her get her happy ending, but it'll be very interesting to see how they turn it around. And also, I think you made a really good point about the whole understanding of Colin as a character and how we're always seeing him through Penelope's eyes and from her perspective, and very little times do we get to see, like, who Colin is actually. Like, we've seen kind of this struggle that he's been having. Obviously, season one, there was the whole thing with Marina, like the Fretherington's cousin, and that whole thing, and when he went to see her this season, it almost seemed like he wanted another shot with her, but obviously then he saw her life now and wasn't going to really mess with that. But I think he's got, like, a lot of soul searching to do. And that really seems like what his identity is going to be about, and kind of figuring out who he is. And that's obviously why he went on the whole travel expedition, trying to, you know, find himself and learn more about the world and everything, because he wants to learn about himself. So I think that'll definitely be an interesting season that we get down the line. But we got to wrap it up with the final thing about this season, and that is the whole Lady Whistledown aspect. And I think that was honestly the biggest heartbreak of the season, seeing Eloise and Penelope's relationship just absolutely shatter. And I mean, it was so difficult, because in one regard, like, Penelope was helping Eloise because she didn't want her to have to be someone she wasn't, like, lie and say she was Lady Whistledown, but at the same time completely betrayed her by writing about her. And it was just so devastating to see that. And I think like the repercussions are going to be insane in the next season. And I just really don't know what to expect. Like if Lady Whistledown will continue to write, if Eloise is going to tell anyone. I have so many questions.
Me too. It was like the way that scene where Eloise and Penelope are standing at that like final ball, and I think in that moment Eloise realizes from the way Penelope is speaking that Penelope is this like gossip of the town and has written about mm-hmm. her. I thought that was like, I could see in from Eloise's perspective, like that's the biggest betrayal, because it's somebody that you've trusted, like somebody who like for Eloise it's like she's been like dying to find out who Lady Whistledown is, and Penelope has kind of been like hiding under her nose the entire time, which is just, I'm sure like for Eloise it's like, how could I have been so like dumb not to be able to see that,
right?
And I think for Penelope, as you mentioned, like she's well-intentioned, but then the way she goes about trying to do damage control doesn't work out the way I think it maybe had worked out in her head. And I feel like maybe that will make Penelope and Colin's whole relationship more difficult, like with Eloise, you know, like absolutely not liking Penelope right now and kind of feeling super betrayed by her. So yeah, definitely like curious to see what happens with Lady Whistledown and Penelope. Maybe somebody else like takes on the role of Lady Whistledown. I don't know.
Just like know? Gossip Girl.
Yeah, no, I don't know. So I think I'm like looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a wild ride that they're going to keep us on, because they just know what they're doing. And I mean, we don't have to wonder if it's coming back, because like I said earlier, it's been renewed for season 3 and 4. But the ultimate question will be whose season will be next. So, you know, I mentioned already, according to the books, they go in age order. So Benedict would be next, but Shonda Rhimes and the creator Chris Van Dusen, who, fun fact, I learned, I don't know if you knew this, but he was actually an Emory alum.
Oh, no way. I actually had no idea. That's so cool.
I didn't know until I think the day that Bridgerton came out, Emory's Instagram, like they posted a thing about the show, and I was like, why are they posting about Bridgerton? And then I read and it was like the creator of the show is actually from, it's an Emory alum. I'm like, oh my god, how do I meet this guy?
That's really cool. I had no idea.
Yeah, so thank you, Emery, for, you know, fostering his education. But they've said that they're not necessarily going in order. So, you know, maybe Colin or Eloise will come next, which I would absolutely love. And I feel like it would make sense because, you know, Penelope is, okay, well, here, actually, no. Because at right now in the storyline, like, what Lady Whistledown has just blown up. So it would really make sense to, you know, strike while the iron is hot and be, you know, discussing Eloise's her story or Colin and Penelope and everything. But the only question is kind of, once Penelope gets her happy ending, like, unless, like you're saying, maybe someone takes Lady Whistledown on from her, like, how would they continue to have it? And I feel like that was all such a big component of the show. It's like Gossip Girl, literally, how could Gossip Girl exist, like the show, without the person that is Gossip Girl? You know, yeah. It has to be the reveal at the very end of the show. Otherwise, it's like, what's the point? So I don't know how they would do it other than making Penelope and Colin's story last. So that way, I don't know. It's
ooh,
so,
I feel like
I didn't think about this now.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Yeah, I think that if they said they're not going to go in order, my feeling is that maybe Eloise will be next, and then they might like end their final season, assuming that they're not renewed for more seasons, with like Colin or Penelope, Lady Whistledown, kind of maybe just like mm-hmm. revealing her identity to everybody, or like somebody else taking it on. So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, I would love to see Eloise's story next. I feel like they did Daphne, a girl, Anthony, a guy, and then maybe Eloise back to one of like the Bridgerton ladies.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise, if they went in age order, that would literally be Anthony, Benedict, and Colin, like three guys in a row. They can't do that. There's no way. Like, not in today's day and age. That would be too many problems, I think. Like, where is our female lead, you know?
Totally.
But, you know, we will get the next season probably, like, I don't know, around the same time next year, maybe a little bit later, because everything seems to be a little bit more than a year these days. But if that's not news enough, there will actually be a prequel to Bridgerton coming out sometime soon. And that's going to focus on Queen Charlotte, Lady Danbury, and Lady Bridgerton.
Oh.
And yeah, so that'll be definitely interesting to kind of go back and see their seasons and love stories and how, you know, they ended up being the women who they are now. And I think the main push for this probably came from when they included that scene where the king came in and we learned that he was sick. And so I think that kind of exposed the viewers to some aspect of their story and kind of wanting to learn more about how their relationship got to that point, maybe. So I think that'll be something different and interesting going forward. But no news on when that'll be happening, before or after the next season of Bridgerton. So we'll just have to wait.
It's been a waiting game, but I feel like it's worth it. Yeah. I'm excited to hear about that prequel. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, I hate, that's the thing I hate with all this, is like blowing through the show in a day only to then wait an entire year, or if not more, till we get more. It's just, it's so frustrating, but like, we do it to ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Rishika, for being on the podcast. I'm beyond excited that we were able to reconnect after all this time, and really so thankful for all of your opinions and just the stories that you were able to bring to today's episode in relation to the new season of Bridgerton and just the South Asian representation. I really was just so moved by it, and I'm so glad that you're able to share it here. And I hope that our listeners, you know, maybe some also are like you and could easily relate to this season and enjoyed the conversation. So just thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura. It's honestly so fun talking about Bridgerton and our thoughts and opinions. And I'm very excited for, you know, the next seasons and for what's to come in the Bridgerton universe.
Oh my gosh, yes. And I hope that we can chat again on some other shows and movies going forward on the podcast, because that's always what I'm down for. You know what I love to talk about.
Yes.
So I'm definitely hoping that we'll be able to do this again soon. But again, thank you everyone for listening. If you're not already following me, please do so at Not So Critically Acclaimed. I will also be tagging Rishika and Jakaria Sisters and their fantastic dancing account on my Instagram today. So be sure to check that out when everything goes live, because truly it's just spectacular to watch these amazing dances. So creative. It's amazing. It'll blow your mind, guys, how talented. And also, like, let's not forget, this isn't the only style of dance that the Jakaria sisters, they're literally in every genre. I mean, I know I used to love your fun fact whenever we had to do the icebreakers, was that you were like trained in classical Russian ballet, and I'm just like, mm-hmm. So casual. Just so casual. But anyway, guys, thanks for listening, and I will hopefully be back soon with another episode. Not sure what it'll be next. I'm not gonna make promises, because last time I did that and then I was away for like more than expected, so I don't want to leave you guys hanging like that again. But we will talk soon, so stay tuned. But bye.
Bye.